Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. All of the shows, podcasts are there, and all kinds of great information. And I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Stan Everett. Stan is the founder of the Legacy Project, which is a group of people that meet together up in northern Colorado, September through March, and they go through the founding era documents of America and why that is relevant to today. And Stan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kim. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you. Did you do any New Year's resolutions by any chance?
Well, we may, but we usually don't, just because we know we're going to break them within a matter of minutes.
I know. Yeah. But happy New Year. We're looking at 2020. It promises to be a raucous year, if you will, on the political scene. And it's actually always been pretty interesting in America. We're going to be talking about new beginnings, the beginning of the founding of America, and what a new beginning that was, really, for the social construct of how human beings live together. But that is something that you specialize in. And where would you say that the new beginning of the American idea started, Stan?
Well, a lot of history preceded the actual document, but in my view, the Declaration of Independence, July 1776, was the line. From that point forward, civilization was then transformed. From that point, prior to that point, then civilization was always structured in a ruler-subject structure, where there were always rulers telling subjects what to do, where the Declaration flips all of that upside down, where you now have self-government instead of ruler government.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that I really have learned this year, you know, we've had the study of Vino and Veritas, gone through the Federalist Papers, and mm-hmm. I've always thought that, you know, the American idea there was the value of the individual, which, yes, that's true, but what the American idea really was all about was protecting the individual's rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And if we put in place a government that would do that, what could happen? Well, what happened was America, Stan.
Yeah, and the history from that point forward, well, after we won the war, then it was 11 years before a constitution was then created. Constitution is simply a document that orders the principles that are articulated in the Declaration of Independence, and then we also ordered our economic system to be a free market, as opposed to a top-down marketplace. So, yeah, it created an incredible new trajectory for civilization. Prior to that, it was pretty much a flat line. Technology and social structure was pretty much a flat line. But after that, then you start into the Industrial Revolution. You go into, you know, this entirely new form of how people interact with one another, not only in the economy, but on a social structure standpoint. And everything just kind of has exploded. And here we are today, you know, talking on devices that are not only phones, they're cameras, they're computers. And all of that is derived from a free market economic system that allows people to invent and then have competition that makes them have to create products that are service-oriented to the customer.
Well, and when you say a flat line for, you know, most of human history, there was a flat line. And again, it was the American founding that really changed things, where they, you know, basically said, you know, what would happen if everyday people had their rights protected and they could pursue their happiness and their life and their liberty? What would happen? And so we talk about the flat line, and my great-grandmother immigrated from Germany, and basically she was quote-unquote kind of an indentured servant, because she stayed with a family in Omaha and to work off her passage for on the ship to get over to America. And then she married my great-grandfather, who whisked her off to the plains of western Kansas, where she had, I think, at least six children, and they lived in a two-room sod house, which is a house made of dirt, which is the original affordable housing. And so my grandmother, you know, initially lived in a sod house. And it is because of this American idea that her granddaughter, like you just mentioned, I can get in a car, come over to the studio, we can talk, we can, you know, broadcast this. And, you know, just a few centuries ago, I would have just been probably a peasant. I mean, I'm a regular person, but everybody was kind of peasants, or you had the rulers. Yes. And so it's so amazing what can happen with everyday people here.
Well, and that's the miracle of the founding. And so many things came together at that one particular time. The ideas of human dignity and flourishing on an individual basis weren't new ideas. Aristotle was talking about those kinds of things in the ancient times prior to, the Old Testament kings and stories of the Old Testament. These ideas had already been on the table. But creating a system that allows those ideas to then be implemented didn't take place until 1776 and then after the war. So it was many, many centuries of these ideas being on the table, but there really wasn't any mechanism put in place because the political structure was such that it was always under a ruler, and then the ruler would make a determination as to what he would allow the subjects to do. So it was pretty magnanimous on the part of our founders to not be rulers, but to be servants of the people. Very unique and very unheard of in the history of humanity.
Okay, on that, Stan Everett, the founders get a bad rap then, because many of our kids are not really taught about the complete picture of the founders. They certainly were imperfect men, because we're all imperfect. However, they were striving towards something of excellence, this whole American idea. But they get this bad rap that they were just a bunch of old white guys, slave owners, and that they were just putting this all together, you know, for their own self-interest. How would you respond to that?
Well, that's pretty typical. If you can't argue the substance, you then attack the person that's delivering the message. I hear it all the time that, you know, Thomas Jefferson as a slave owner, who was the primary author of the Declaration, was a hypocrite. And I guess the question then goes back to the accuser, and who do you know that isn't a hypocrite? And does that mean that you're not a hypocrite, which you are? Then are we discrediting everything you've done and all the things that have occurred out in your life because you're a hypocrite? So, I mean, the characterizations are very flawed, but they're very easy to buy into, particularly when they're ladled out on a constant stream of misinformation. So there's just a lot of lack of understanding, and I don't know, in our program, we don't focus on the people. We always focus back on the principles, because the principles are timeless, self-evident principles, whereas the people were flawed people. Mm-hmm. And if you want to destroy the principles, then the first thing you do is attack the people. And I think that's just tactics from people that are not very interested in a self-governed form of society.
Well, and that requires some intellectual honesty then. Certainly, as you mentioned, the founders were flawed. They were hypocrites. We're flawed. We're hypocrites. We certainly strive, you know, hopefully we're striving for excellence, but we're just flawed human beings. But as you mentioned, the principles, this idea that every individual should have these rights protected of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, that is pretty amazing. And the other thing regarding slavery is slavery was prevalent throughout the world at that time. There was white-on-black slavery. There was black-on-black slavery. There was slavery prevalent throughout the world. So the idea that these little colonies hanging on the eastern seaboard of the United States would, A, stand up to Britain, and then, about 70, 75 years later, go to war to settle this question on whether one man could own another, instead of chastising them, it's rather remarkable, Stan Everett.
Yeah. Well, and George Washington is a classic example of the issue of slavery and why he retained slaves. First of all, he was a very minor player in the slave market. He inherited his slaves from his family on the lands that they had owned. Then his brother and his father had died, and so he inherited that. He married Martha Custis, who had also a lot of land and a lot of slaves. So he was a man, in all of his writings you can read, that he abhorred the idea of African slaves being a staple of our economy. But he wouldn't release them until after his death, and his rationale was, if I release my slaves, they would go out and then they would become slaves, because there wasn't any place in the United States, at that time the colonies of England, where it was legal to release slaves, nor were you really a free person as a African. You were considered to be a slave. So wherever he would, if he did release them, they would go out, they would be recaptured. He didn't want those families to be torn apart. So he said, I can't not release my slaves until there is a mechanism in place where they can become free people. That didn't occur until the Constitution. So after the Constitution, his presidency, and now you had states that were free states. And so he could release his slaves, who then moved up into the New England states or into the Middle Atlantic states, where they could actually become free. Prior to that, they couldn't be free. They would have been recaptured and made slaves again.
You know, I did not realize that. And I think a lot of people don't realize that the founders, they certainly grappled with this question. And that in the Constitution, it says what, after 20 years, there would be no new importation of slaves into the United States. Am I correct on that, Stan?
Yeah. And Virginia, a slave colony as well as a slave state, the economy there was totally dependent on slaves. They, at the House of Burgesses, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, and other delegates to the House of Burgesses, five times tried to pass laws that would eliminate the importation of slaves into Virginia. Five times, the governor of Virginia, representing the king, said absolutely not. The economy of the entire colonies is dependent on slaves, and so we are not going to allow that. So these men were trying a decade in advance of the Declaration of Independence to address the slave issue and get it to kind of eliminate itself, because if you didn't have any new importation, then you'd have free people born from existing slaves, and then you would not have a slave society other than an indentured servant society. But these guys were fully aware that the slave issue was a very destructive and immoral issue, but they really were kind of locked into how do we get it out of our society when it's kind of a necessary piece and the king won't even allow it.
Okay, Stan Everett, let's go to break. When we come back, we just need to, again, hit this point. This is remarkable what the Americans did on this. So this is Kim Munson wishing you a very happy new year. I'm talking with Stan Everett. He is the founder of the Legacy Project, and we're talking about America's founding, the new beginning, really a new beginning for all mankind. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, the New Beginnings of America, this amazing idea, America, where everyday regular people can go after their hopes and dreams. You know, Jason McBride, just two generations ago in my life, my great-grandmother, my grandmother grew up on the plains of western Kansas in a two-room sod house. This was a house made out of dirt. It was affordable housing, if you will. But it's because of this American idea that you and I get to sit here in this studio and drive over here in a warm car and have our phones and our computers and all this. And it's the miracle of America.
Well, it is, Kim. I've always said I'd rather be here in America on our worst day than anywhere else on their best day. Proudly would say I think America is still the greatest country on the face of the planet. You know, thank God for America. Just think what things could look like if America hadn't come along and done what they did and eventually intervened in one of the most important battles that ended up shaping the entire face of the planet.
Well, and World War II,
right.
You know, right during this time, the Battle of the Bulge started on December 16th. It was a 40-day battle, and it was Hitler's last push. He was trying to get to the fuel supplies in Antwerp, Belgium, and our guys held. But it became that line, it looked like a bulge. That's why they call it the Battle of the Bulge. But here we are, that was 75 years ago. And here we are, we're able to be in warm houses to, you know, be with friends and family. And we have the miracle of food, going to the grocery store. And, you know, you can have fresh fruit now, because again, all of this is because I think of the American idea and capitalism.
Well, it certainly is. You know, it's not bad to be poor in America. We don't want anybody to be poor, but just, you know, a lot of people are still pretty good off. But you're right. Where else could you come? And not even just people that were born in America, but people that have legally immigrated to America can make a tremendous life here. There's a reason that America is called the land of opportunity. Whoever coined that phrase knew exactly what they're talking about, because it's a perfect, apt description of what our country has to offer.
Well, and you know, to that point, Jason, I think that actually, and we mentioned the poor, and we want people to be able to move up the economic ladder, that's for sure. But you think about it, I think Heritage Foundation did an article, and the poor in America, many of them, TVs, heat, air conditioning, cars. Could you imagine? They're actually living better than maybe a pharaoh back in, you know, before the time of Christ. I mean, it's an amazing thing.
That's true, yeah, and they certainly have cleaner water.
We
know that for sure.
That's for sure. So, Jason McBride, you are a valued partner, you and John Buckingham and all of your colleagues over there at Presidential Wealth Management. And we did Santa Stocks last week, and would really recommend that people download that, because it's a lot of fun to look at those.
Yeah, absolutely. That free report on this year's 2019 Santa Stocks can be downloaded at airpresidential.com, kimmonson.com, or give us a call, 303-694-1600. We'll send you out a copy the old school way. And Kim, maybe we should do stocks tomorrow, you know, after a night of wild partying, and see what we come up with.
Come up with on that day, huh?
Yeah, those could be some bad ones.
Those could be some bad ones. So, Jason, Happy New Year. I wish you and your family a very prosperous 2020.
Absolutely. And I'll look forward to seeing you next year, Kim.
Sounds great. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home, because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, and Happy New Year. Thrilled to have on the line with me Stan Everett, the founder of the Legacy Project, which is a group of business people that meet up in northern Colorado September through March. They go through the founding era documents, why they are important. Stan Everett, thank you so much for this conversation. It is a very important one.
Well, thank you.
So as we're talking about new beginnings, America's founding, and during break, you just mentioned that there were really two principles that we're looking at. So break that down for us, Stan.
Well, the Declaration articulates or enumerates the principles that the nation is going to be founded on, that are different principles than a ruler-subject society. And so there's five principles. Everyone's familiar with the, we hold these truths to be self-evident. They're talking about these truths being new principles. So they're introducing a new set of principles. First one is that they're endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that we've discussed already is that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are endowed by our Creator with rights. First of all men are created equal, so there's a creation or a theological component to this first principle of all men are created equal. They're endowed by their Creator, so the Creator is endowing the rights that we've talked about, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We've also talked about then the purpose of government is another principle, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So that flips the ruler-subject society structure to a power consent of the governed, the representatives of the governed. The power resides with the people. Implementation of that is the fifth principle, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. So those are the five principles, but there's a lot of theology that precedes the ideology, and it's important to understand that the Creator is now replacing the king. The man king is now being replaced by the God Creator. And so that empowers people under the authority and the under the authority of God, as they understood it, to then be individually endowed with rights from God. So their accountability to secure those rights and manage those rights becomes something that is accountable to God, as opposed to accountable to the privileges usually given out by the king to his friends, cronies, and relatives. So there's a lot of going on in these, 56 words that create a new social structure that's founded on theology, philosophy, and then ideology is kind of the outcome of that.
Well, Stan, we've talked about it in the first segment. The founders, I think, get a bad rap. And I think there are people out there that cannot really understand that there are people that have put their, their blood, their treasure, their sacred honor, all of those things on the line to pass on something good to the next generation, like, like free or liberty and to stand against tyranny. I think that sometimes when the founders get such a bad rap, there are folks that just can't understand that there are people that aspire to pass things good onto the next generation. Does that make any sense at all?
Well, no, you hit the exact right word. The whole concept here is aspirational. So people are aspiring to be better people, and then they're aspiring to hand their children a better life, a better society, a better opportunity. So the whole thing is aspirational. And if you study religions from around the world, the religion that they were subscribing to, Protestant Christianity, is also all aspirational. It's not legalistic. Christ doesn't say, well, you've got to do this, this, and this, and then you're going to be saved. You're aspiring to do good things because of your gratitude to God's already delivered salvation. Don't need to get into the theological too deeply, but that's what the basis of their whole thought process was, and that's why they were able to succeed in replacing a man king with a creator God, that then people would be accountable to that. And there was a lot of consensus among all of the colonies in their belief, their theological beliefs, so that's why this all worked.
Okay, just a quick comment, because I've thought a lot about this over the years, and Christianity, well, mankind, we're certainly fallen and imperfect, and so what happens is sometimes imperfect men will hijack a philosophy for their own purposes, and so when we talk about Christianity, it actually has been used in a way that it really is not honest. I don't think it's intellectually honest about what the true gospel is. And so I think it's important to make that distinction between the two when you say that you know, Christianity is aspirational and the idea of America is aspirational, that is different than when, you know, when the Christianity has been used by man to put forward through force different things. Sure. So explain that just a little bit.
Well, the distinction you're drawing or suggesting is the distinction between religion and faith. Religion is how people organize their worship of a higher power, whether that's multiple gods in the ancient era, whether that's one god in the Hebrew or Islamic prophet era, or whether that's Protestant Christianity. So the Christian aspect that I'm talking about is more discipleship, following of Jesus Christ, and gratitude for the salvation, and then how do you then interact as a society with those kinds of religious or more faith beliefs as opposed to religious organizations. And any organization derived from man will fail. Just go through the Old Testament. You see it over and over and over again. How is society structured? And then why does society fail? Well, a lot of it has to do from Old Testament writings, due to the failure of the continuation of putting God first. So this isn't anything new. It's going on a long time, other than our nation has crafted a system based on those principles that has lasted longer than any single system throughout the history of humanity. So it's a pretty profound track record of success. And in the ancient times, I mean, there were no perfect people. David obviously was fallen. Moses was a murderer and a killer and a coward and, you know, was a stutterer and all sorts of things. So I've even heard some pastors say that the Apostle Paul, before he became Apostle Paul, was Saul, and he owned all sorts of slaves because he's a very wealthy man and ran a business. So I don't know if there is a perfect human being other than in Christian doctrine, Jesus Christ, but I think that's what they were trying to put forth here, is our loyalty and our aspirations are towards our religious beliefs, and this is how we would then organize a society with God as the leader of that society.
Well, and as the founders gave a hat tip, if you will, to the Creator when they said that we are endowed by our Creator with the certain inalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and that all men are created equal. You know, those are really, really powerful words. And I'm sad in some ways, Stan Everett, that we are not making sure that we teach these beautiful, beautiful words, this aspirational vision for the way people interact with their government, that they are actually, it's by the consent of the governed. I'm sad that we don't teach our kids more about this, and that there's such a battle of ideas that's raging right now in America about all of this.
Well, and you said it in one of the breaks, the quote from Ben Franklin, when the lady asked him, "What have you given us, sir, from the Constitutional Convention?" "It's a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it." Well, it's the "you can keep it" that again, removes the responsibility from the founding fathers. It puts it in the hands of the people.
Uh-huh.
You is the people. And so that is a very profound way. And, you know, Franklin was such a wordsmith and a wit with his words. But it's an exact description of what he had given us as one of the great founding fathers, was something for us to then be vigilant and protective, understand, and make sure that we're securing the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, which is our heirs. So they understood what they were doing, and they made it very clear. I agree with you, it's a little bit discouraging to recognize how few people really understand this anymore. But at the same time, they have it built into their system. Our economy supports service. I mean, really, America is where you tip. You don't tip anywhere else in the world. And part of that tip is an acknowledgement of great service. And so you're doing something where you're serving somebody else and you're getting acknowledgement back from who you are serving. So it's a service community. It's a service aspect of how we live. You can't be greedy as your primary motivation if you own a sandwich shop, because there's competition down the street that's going to be offering better value. If greed is your motivator, you will go out of business. Because if it's only money and it's not service and it's not value and it's not price, then the economic system will not allow that to occur. So the vices are managed through the institutions that we have already established, and people are living that life. We just had a big snowstorm. I would bet 50% of the people were shoveling other people's driveways. Love your neighbor. So where do these concepts come from? They don't come from just out of thin air. These are concepts that are principles, and our nation reflects those concepts much better than any other nation.
Yeah, it is amazing. And yes, you see neighbors out there helping other neighbors. It is something that it is beautiful to behold, particularly during this this wonderful holiday season. Let's go to break, Stan Everett. This is Kim Munson. It's the Kim Munson Show. We're wishing you a very happy new year. We're talking about new beginnings, the beginning of the founding of America. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Wishing you all a very happy new year, prosperous 2020. Thrilled to have on the line with me Stan Everett. He is the founder of the Legacy Project. It's a group of business people that meet in northern Colorado once a month, September through March, and they get together to talk about our founding era documents and what that means. And in the previous segment, you talked about the principles within the vision of the Declaration, that these truths are self-evident and there's a purpose of government and we can alter or abolish it if it gets out of hand. We might want to remember that these days. But let's talk about implementation. So they have this idea, and you know, Stan, we all know people. They are great idea people, but to get it implemented, it doesn't happen. But the founders not only had the idea, but they figured out a way to implement that. So explain that to our listeners.
Well, after the Revolutionary War was won, the ideas and ideals could then be put into place. Articles of Confederation, which were how we were kind of governing the colonies or the new states during the war and then after the war, were failing terribly. We were going into feudal state nations where we were battling each other. Every state had its own currency. They all had their own tariffs and taxes. So it was really dysfunctional, very problematic, and everybody was beginning to recognize that we weren't going to survive as a United States at all unless we reorganized a little bit. So the Constitution was then the speed of the Constitution to me was fascinating, because the Declaration took a year and a half in order to write. The Constitution was just a few months. And it was written, it was approved by the convention, it was sent out to the states and then ratified, all within a six-month period.
Wow.
That's a lot of work being done in a very, very short time when you have a bunch of people trying to figure it out,
right,
especially. So the Constitution orders those principles. In the fifth principle, the language talks about it's when a government becomes destructive to its ends, which is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as rights, creator endowed rights, it is proper then for the people to organize a new form of government. And that form is going to have a foundation on the principles, and it's going to be organizing the powers that would then be protecting the rights and the safety and the happiness of the people. So that's what the Constitution is. It's basically the actual document that implements the fifth principle of the Declaration. After the Constitution is implemented and the nation is now under a constitutional republican form of government, we have to create an economic system. So Hamilton and Washington and some of the other fathers created a new free market system based on the philosophies and ideas of Adam Smith, who was a moral philosopher, wrote The Wealth of Nations, and published that book in 1776, coincidentally, the same year we get our Declaration. So now they create an entirely new form of economic system. We have a new form of government. We have a new form of society, not a ruler subject, not a top-down. So how do we create an economy that creates a means of supporting all of this? I mean, the magnitude of what these fellows went through is just astonishing. I mean, if you look at it in context to any other historic event, it's just profound. So that's how they've implemented the principles of the Declaration, by adopting a constitution that separates powers, so it's not one person or one house or one entity. So there's three branches of government. The states have their rights. The people have their rights. So all of these powers are diluted to ensure that there isn't somebody that's got a power mania that wants to take over, because the powers are all diluted and you have all of these safeguards against that. Neil Gorsuch has just written a new book, coincidentally called A Republic, Ma'am, If You Can Keep It. And it's all about the separation of powers from the perspective of a Supreme Court justice. Fascinating, fascinating book. But I think that's what is the most miraculous. And this whole thing has survived, like I said earlier, longer than any other form of government that has ever been on the planet throughout history.
Well, Stan, it seems like this form of government is under assault right now in America. As we look into 2020, I think that this is our time. I think that we have to, first of all, understand why we believe what we believe. So this conversation that we're having on the last day of 2019 is so important, to go back and understand the founding and just what these guys grappled with. But it is our time now. It is our time that we make sure that we pass something good to the next generation. It is mind-boggling to me that we are thinking about passing on to our kids a big fat IOU. And it seems that we need to probably look to ourselves and figure out a way to not do that. And I think there are ways to do that. The economy, if the economy is strong, that is a good time to rein in spending. Perhaps we can have everybody take a little bit of a haircut. I mean, I think there's some things that we can do to make sure that we pass something good on to the next generation. Your comment, Stan.
Well, and there are, but I think the founders' first principles would be where we need to start. We cannot expect people to fix these problems. We cannot elect leaders with an expectation that they're going to fix these problems. The people themselves are in charge, and we still have a system that allows that to be done. They've got to select representatives that are actually going to represent the interest of the people. And prior to that, then there has to be a theological connection. Because what we're doing is we're placing our trust in systems, we're placing our trust in people. The founders, with the Declaration, said, do not place your trust there. Place your trust in the Creator. And with that trust, then you'll be able to succeed. And so that, to me, is step one. Then you can organize the society and the systems in order to fulfill that placement of your trust. But that seems to be another issue that gets skipped over tremendously, because we all focus on the systems and we all focus on the process and we all focus on the people. But those are really not where we should be focusing our efforts. We need to start with the fundamental truths that the founders put forth if we want to continue with this success.
Well, and, you know, maybe that is why that there's kind of this flippant comments about the founders. And I think you mentioned it in one of the previous segments that instead of really talking about the ideas, you tear down those that, you know, came up with the ideas. And that has been very difficult. But I at least that's been difficult for me in some conversations over the years. But I realize that what I need to do is know why we believe what we believe, what these principles are, and then I can engage in thoughtful conversations instead of emotional conversations.
Perfect. Yeah, and communication is the key from our standpoint as this generation that needs to recognize it's our responsibility. So typically we don't communicate with anybody outside of our age group. We don't communicate with anybody that's outside of our thought group. So we tend to surround ourselves and associate with like-mindedness and like generation. That isn't going to get us anywhere. We need to be able to reach out to other people in other generations that have different viewpoints, but we need to train ourselves how to communicate the principles and never get drawn into a policy or a person or a political discussion. Always keep it at the level of the principles. Nobody's going to argue with you that all men are created equal. That's a principle. Who's arguing with that? I don't think there is, other than people that aspire to be rulers, and they have this new destiny of their own rulership and that arrogance, but that isn't going to wash very well with the American population. We see how it doesn't wash. But I think that's, you've hit it right on the head, Kim. The way we communicate, we've got to reach out, and we've got to get people to understand the principles and engage them in conversations about the principles, to find how much we agree with each other once we start talking about the principles. And that's really the important part, is let's start from where we agree. We may not have the same faith base, but we would agree that they had that idea and that faith base, and that seems to have worked. So unless we're going to replace that faith base with something else, at least we would acknowledge that, yeah, that seems to work for our society. We want to be good people. We want to be virtuous people. We want to do what's right for our neighbor. We're doing those things anyway as American citizens, but those are derived from these principles of the Declaration.
These ideas that all men are created equal by our Creator, and that we have these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Stan Everett, we're just about out of time. Thank you so much. I wish you a very prosperous 2020. We've got a lot of work to do in 2020, and we need to engage in this battle of ideas. You're doing that with the Legacy Project. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kim. Appreciate it. Happy New Year to you again.
Well, thank you so much. And our quote for today is Benjamin Franklin, his memoirs of the life and writings of Benjamin Franklin. He says, "They who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. I wish you all a very prosperous 2020. Happy New Year. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't serve.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.